Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We are entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, and in today's show, you are going to get some nuggets from the general manager of the Sacramento Rivercats. Yes, I've got Chip Maxim in the house, and today we're going to end up talking about what's going on in the world of professional sports. We're going to be talking about how the Rivercats battled through the pandemic. I mean, can you imagine what it's like to be running an event venue when all of a sudden the music stops and nobody can attend a live event for an extended period of time? So we're going to hear that story today. Stick around. Think about how perseverance looks in your life. You hear what Chip Maxim did to persevere, and the Rivercats are now back on track. So stick around, my friends. Today is going to be a unique show, very special show. We have the privilege of having Chip Maxim. He is the general manager of the Sacramento Rivercats. He's a guy that knows baseball. He knows leadership. And today we're going to hear a little bit about, I think we'll get an overview of the baseball industry and professional baseball industry, but also we'll be able to dive into his team, his business, and how he dealt with some of the difficulties that a lot of us had to deal with over the last year and a half, 2 years. So welcome to the show, Chip.
Mark, a pleasure, man. Always great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And I don't know if I know a whole lot. I'll say I continue to learn about baseball. I continue to learn about small business and leadership. So maybe I can learn something from you today.
Well, let's back up to that moment, the champagne moment, and then maybe walk us through, if you don't mind, this last couple of years, because there's had to have been some ups and downs. We'll dive into that a little bit, and then maybe we can back up and maybe we can talk about Major League Baseball and just professional sports in general after we dive into your business a bit.
Yeah, it's funny the way life works. I tell our young staff, one, you can't replace experience. And what incredible experience we've all gotten over this last 18 months. And I talk about what we all went through in 2008, 2009. We went through a great recession. Now we went through a global pandemic. I think, Mark, guys like us can do about anything now. We'll see what life throws at us.
You've been beat up so hard. Yeah, nothing could kill me.
So it was, we go back to September 17th, 2019. I remind our staff about this because on that day we won the AAA National Championship. The Rivercats are the only team in all of minor league baseball to win three AAA titles. So we're very proud of that. I was honored as the PCL Executive of the Year on that day, and it happened to be my 40th birthday. So I thought I was riding high. I was like, this is great. Life is awesome. Fast forward a few months, how quickly all of that was forgotten about when our world turned upside down. And so it certainly went from the high we were planning. We had hired all of our staff, gone through all the training for 2020. We're going to have the Giants over for an exhibition game, and so we were excited about that. We had just had Cirque du Soleil at the ballpark. We thought it was going to be a banner revenue year. We're riding high. Everything was pointing up. And then March 17th, we closed our offices, not having any idea of how long this would drag on and what real impact was ahead. But yeah, life throws us curveballs, right?
Yeah. Okay, so March 17th, you decide to close the office. Describe the emotion and maybe the process associated with, if you scale back gradually, that's one approach. It sounds like you were able to be pretty decisive.
Yeah, it was, man, the conversations, the stress. I mean, anybody in a small business understands what we're talking about, that stress, that anxiety. How do you choose to operate? And for those that don't know, the Rivercats were not owned by the Giants. We're owned by the Savage family. They're working owners. They're in the office every day. There's not Wall Street money behind us. We not only own the Rivercats, the business entity, but we own the ballpark. And so a lot of teams during the pandemic got relief from a city or a county. And so they were able to just push their lease payments and defer them to a different time. We could not do that with our bonds. And so when we started looking ahead,
in some ways you guys are like a small business. I mean, you're not tiny, but you're a private business.
We are a very high profile small family business is what we call ourselves, 60 full-time employees. And so we started looking ahead and said, this could get bad. And so we started talking through, well, it may only be 2 weeks, that won't even impact opening day, but if it keeps going on, we need to be ready to make decisions. And so really those last 2 weeks in March, we did a whole lot of models of how bad this could get, what we'd have to do for staffing changes, and really our worst fears came true. And once we realized this is going to linger on, and talking with other teams, we knew we had to make decisive cuts just to preserve the organization, you know, and start thinking about cash flow.
Yeah. Now, a guy that's been beat up a few times and had to make very uncomfortable cuts, did you have to do that yourself?
Yeah, it was important for me, Mark, to make those calls. The silver lining was we had made some plans, and then when the government came out with their stimulus, their unemployment, the stimulus checks, the unemployment options, the federal aid to the unemployment, we did the math, and we figured, okay, some of our employees are going to be in a good spot, or this really is not going to affect them. So one, we wanted to communicate that. Well, I think we're going to keep going back to communication as we talk, because it became so important. And let me add, I love John Gordon, reading his books, listening to his podcast, and something he says, where there's a lack of communication, people fill that void with negativity. That was flashing red at me during this time. I didn't want the negativity creeping in. And so I wanted to communicate myself to our staff what our plan was, why we were making these cuts, what options they had with unemployment. And I wanted to tell them that I was taking a pay cut as well. We had to lay off 2/3 of our staff, but everybody took a pay cut and had reduced hours, from our owners, myself, everybody. So that was important for me to communicate directly to them. There were some emotional calls. There was a lot of confusion. There was some frustration. There was anger. But I wanted to make sure I was a part of that and could answer the questions as best I possibly could during that time.
Well, it's interesting because in 2008 timeframe, our businesses at the time were thriving. I remember champagne type moments as we were growing, and then 2008 Lehman Brothers files bankruptcy, and we had a couple of months where we're not doing much business, and we had hundreds of employees. Mm-hmm. And so what are we going to do? And I had to make some of those we made some of those tough decisions where people got their pay cut, we let a number of people go, but one of the things I relied on at that time was or referred back to in my heart is, like, I thought back to the book Good to Great. Mm. There's a story about Admiral James Stockdale. He's the longest living prisoner in the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam. And he had a quote in the book that I'm sort of paraphrasing it, but face the brutal facts as we know them, yet never lose that unwavering belief that in the end, everything's gonna be okay. And I think COVID, it represented this extended period of uncertainty for a lot of us. When is it? Anybody in the entertainment business didn't know when we were gonna get back to face to face. So I can only imagine. The emotion. But so you make these cuts, yeah. The tough phone calls. Some people are pissed. Other people are heartbroken, I suppose. So a number of the people that I've talked to in this realm were able to kind of get PPP money to hold them over and some of that kind of stuff. Did you guys qualify for any of that kind of stuff? Was that a Band-Aid at all?
Yeah, let me touch on the Stockdale principle, okay. Because I'm so glad you brought that up. That was in the back of my mind, too. Initially, I was telling our staff, look, this is probably only going to be 2 weeks. We're going to be back to work before opening day. Then I quickly realized I'm setting expectations we can't meet, and I don't know when we're coming back. But that principle, it's not when we're coming back, it's we will come back. And so once we made those cuts, with that in the back of my mind, and you read stories, Louis Zamperini and some of those guys that went through those, whether a prisoner of war or lost at sea, that was how they survived, is they didn't say we're going to be rescued by Christmas. It's we will be rescued. I don't know when, but we will. And so we took that approach, and I sat down with our owners in an executive meeting right after those layoffs, and I said, okay, we're going to get through this. And when we do, how do we want to be remembered? How do we want to be viewed at the end of this? And it was great because without missing a beat, Susan Savage said, a best friend of the community. And Mark, that was fantastic because that was seared in my mind and I was able to communicate that message, and it really helped us shape our culture and really how we acted and how we responded and what we did for our employees and our community and our partners and our fans from that point on and throughout COVID. So that was a great message, and we came back to that line, be a best friend of the community over and over again. And so I'm so glad you brought that up because I was thinking about that heading in and I didn't want to overlook that part.
Well, interesting. There's a lot to this. So you talked about communication and you did a lot of communication. I actually took that same approach. Some people even told me I was communicating too much. I have some of my teammates, right? They're like, you're communicating too much because you're, and I was trying to be as transparent as possible,
right?
So that we all were in the war together, if you will. But they thought that, when you're the leader and you aren't sure when and how you're going to come back, every time you bring it up, some people would rather bury their head. Some employees would rather bury their head than, I think, than maybe face the brutal facts. And so they kind of got tired of the constant, communication. Did you ever hear that? And I'm also curious, I was able to do that face to face. So we were, we'd all pile into a room, you know, except we had some offices around the country, but most of it was in Rockland, and most of it was face to face, and it was good about being face to face. But I can imagine a Zoom call being a heck of a lot less, personal at times.
Yeah, the beauty of having a big ballpark is we've got a lot of room to spread out. And so, some of the things that we did, we said, what does a friend of the community look like? We started, we had a bunch of produce that we had ordered in anticipation of our Giants exhibition game. So Corey Branner, our VP of food and beverage at that time, he came up with a great idea. He's like, I'm going to load it up my pickup. I'm going to take it to the food bank. They need it. Well, then the food bank said, we need volunteers. And so our staff, our remaining staff, but then we also communicated the opportunity to staff we had laid off. Our staff we laid off, Mark, they wanted to still be a part of the team. They wanted to help and donate their time. So we all went together to the Yolo County Food Bank and boxed up goods. And then they said, we need a place to distribute our boxes. There's such a need right now. So we said, we have a big parking lot. Come on out. So they still, on Wednesday mornings, will distribute food from our parking lot. Well, then we said, again, our former VP of food and beverage, our executive chef, they said, we've got hot dogs in the freezer. Why don't we do some meals to go, and we can make a little bit of money. And our thought then is, we don't need to be profitable. We need to pay for salary. So how do we put together family four packs? People can buy these online. They can do drive-through pickup in our parking lot. So we get to keep employees employed. We get to see our fans. And then after these events, to your point, and we would invite all of our front office out, 20 of us that were still left, and anybody that just wanted to come out and hang out. And we'd go and sit in center field, throw a football around, throw a baseball around, chase a frisbee, have a couple beers, and just connect. And people could ask, hey, what's going on? What are you thinking? And so it was a real informal, just casual, and that face-to-face connection, safe, outdoors, spread apart, that we really needed during that time. So I think, one, we provided communication, but we also provided that important relationship component to our staff as well. And so those kind of came about organically, but then we started realizing how important they were, and we tried to be more purposeful as the summer went on. So we did stuff like that. We made calls to check in with people, try to call everybody once a month that we had laid off, try to send some emails out. The people we hadn't talked about yet is our 600 seasonal staff that rely on working for us, and a lot of them work for the Kings as well. And so they lost their opportunities to serve in the suites or be an usher. And so we tried to communicate through email to those folks, just letting them know what was going on. So overall, a lot of trial and error. And to your point, wanted to communicate as much as possible. Maybe we over-communicated, but I'd rather do that than under-communicate.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how leadership, you and the Savage family and the other leaders respond. And you see if the leaders respond in a way that is that people want to emulate, it's inspiring, I think, to the rest of us, because I will admit for myself, so I got my man Scott over here. He's heard me, he's a guy that I can vent to with like the innermost feelings about stress and stuff like that. And on March 17th, at that, I can't remember that date specifically, but I was like, oh no, right? I thought it was going to be another 2008 for me.
Yeah.
It didn't turn out quite to be that way on our businesses, but it wasn't positive, and for a number of them. But I had those same flashback moments, and I was, here we go again. Yeah. And so I can only imagine. So my leadership sucked.
I doubt that.
I tipped my cap to people that held their guns and played through it strongly with their teammates, and that's. I always say everything's a leadership issue. So congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
So the team rallies. You begin to walk us through. When did you know that everything was going to be okay? Because right, people are now back in the stands and so on, and you guys are playing baseball.
Yeah, it was. And through all of this, Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball were renegotiating their agreement. And so for the longest time, we didn't know what the future of Minor League Baseball was going to look like. And so that stress on top of COVID. So I'll go back. You brought up the Savage family. Jeff Savage was great. Matty Stryker, our VP of Finance. Those two were researching everything that was being put out there from California, from the federal government, to try and understand the PPP and other loans that were available. And so they made sure that as soon as we were able to apply, we were able to apply for those loans. But Mark, we had a date on the calendar where we can run out of cash. And that's scary. And I know I mention that because a lot of your small business people that are listening and tune in, they understand that. They probably had that date circled as well. So they're, we were trying to operate proactively, not in fear, but with the reality of the situation. And so I think when some of the PPP started coming in. I think when for us, it was fantastic. We had, you know, we talk about renewal rates every year. Renewal rate is our season ticket members that are here with us in one season and then renew and come back the next season. And traditionally, we're between 85 and 90%, which is great. We had our best renewal year ever from people that had signed up for 2020. Many of them had paid their balance in full. And they said, you know what, Chip, we love you guys. We want to support you. Mark, I was so humbled. I remember a couple people, this one lady in particular, she said, you know what? Use my money to pay for an employee. I don't need my money back. Gosh. You guys need it. I'll pay again next year. I mean, there was. I'm getting chills talking about it because there were several people like that that were just so supportive, and so that certainly helped. We didn't predict we'd have that much support. We had great partners that stuck by us during that time. Obviously, Sutter Health is a great partner, and Atlas Disposal. I mentioned they did a lot of stuff for us. Ace Hardware and so many others were like, hey, we support you guys. We don't need our money back. Well, let's extend our agreement. California Bank of Commerce, Scott Myers, and his team, let's extend our agreement, push it out another year. Like we're here, we're a team, we're partners. That's what this means. And so that support really helped us. We realized, okay, we've got this additional support. That's going to help us go even further. And then some of these events that we were able to do, Father's Day catch on the field. Then in the fall, we did some outdoor dining. And so we were able to start bringing a little bit of cash in. And then we started selling a little bit for the 2021 season. People were optimistic. So then we're like, okay, we're going to be in a good spot. 2021 is still going to be tough because while the revenue looks better because we rolled all that money over, the cash isn't there to back it up. And so when you think about a cash flow perspective, we're still trying to be cautiously optimistic as we go through this year. But I'll get into it if you want to a little bit more. We made a few changes, and we've been incredibly surprised at how people have responded. They're spending on food and beverage when they come to games. They're spending on merchandise. All those per caps, all those numbers are up, which we didn't know. How do we anticipate that? So that's certainly a good thing. We're seeing great response in ticket sales. Groups are still lagging because companies didn't want to book the group outings until they felt it was safe, and so that's still a little bit behind. We're still not back to full capacity. Like many people, again, we have issues with staffing, and we want to make sure we can accommodate the people that come out to games, but we're back up and running. And so to answer your question, it's a long answer to your question. I think it was sometime in the new year when we flipped the calendar and we started looking at how we were positioning, the response we were getting for the 2021 season, how we were starting to get people inquiring about high school and college graduations at an outdoor event. We said, okay, we weren't predicting any of that revenue. Now these new revenue streams are coming in. We're going to be okay. And we're going to come out in a good spot. And so then we had to shift to let's staff back up. Let's make sure that we've got our employees back in the office so that we're not lagging behind too much, which that's a whole other story happy to get into that. But that's been it's been fun and a challenge as well. We've learned a lot over the last couple months.
Was there anything? So talk to a lot of people in the community, small business owners, medium-sized business owners, and there was sort of, and it happened with our company as well, maybe an epiphany regarding like a pivot, right? So we have our revenue streams that we had prior, as those begin to change because of COVID, like we did a lot of events, our events stopped, and we ended up deciding to start a new venture. Was there anything that was like a breakthrough idea or a change, something innovative that happened that'll help you in the long run? Because almost like a blessing in disguise, because you had the downtime, if you will.
Yeah, I'll say a couple things. One is we went to a cashless facility, and that was strongly pushed by the state of California. It was strongly pushed by Major League Baseball, again, just to avoid unnecessary contact, right? And we had talked about going cashless in our parking lots, but we knew it would be a challenge. We weren't sure how it would be received by fans coming out. And, you know, when you talk to companies, they're like, hey, up to 20% of your cash is walking away in those types of situations. So we were exploring those options, but COVID and reopening, we ripped the Band-Aid off. And so in our parking lots, at our concession stands, that's helped us out a ton to go cash free. It's sped up transactions so people aren't waiting in line. And obviously when we first opened it was only mobile ordering was the only thing allowed. The state wouldn't allow people to walk up and stand in line at concession stands. And so that mobile ordering was kind of a side piece of the cashless. And that's been great. It's helping us to just include more technology. We're learning about our fans. We're learning about what they want to purchase. We're able to speed up that purchase process and communicate with them. They can sit in their seat. They don't have to wait in line. We text them when their food is ready.
Oh, nice.
So let's just push some of these things forward. Digital tickets, mobile only is another one. Again, just like many of us at the airport, we'd started doing mobile tickets, but it was only about a 20% adoption until this year. And so, with the state wanting to make sure that we can contact trace and communicate with people, we needed emails and cell numbers to communicate. And so again, there's a learning curve with some of that, but we were forced to do it, and it's been fantastic for us because again, people are giving us their information. We're able to email them, know before you go, clear bag policy, some of these other changes. We're able to remind them about start times, text them, don't forget we've got a giveaway tonight if you want to show up early. You know, gates open at 6 o'clock, so we're able to communicate a lot better and get to know our fans more, and they're able to communicate back to us in lots of ways. And then for anybody coming to manage your tickets, it's simply a forward an email to somebody. You can pass along mobile tickets and parking. So for a lot of our suite holders, a lot of our members, it's really made their management of tickets a whole lot easier than trying to tear apart tickets, put them in an envelope, decide who's getting them, you know, curry them over to somebody. So it streamlined things a lot for us.
That's great. I have to imagine too, you think about how it affected the customer, but it may have reduced headcount too. If you don't have to have somebody sitting there counting the money, yes, or, you know, doing some of this processing, it's all digital. I mean, I have to imagine those innovations, you know, allow you to hold down, you know, your expenses a little bit.
Absolutely. We were able to eliminate our cash room to your point. So that saved headcount. Little did we know the challenge it would be to get staffing this year. And so to be able to eliminate headcount in certain areas and redistribute our people to other places has been vital for us. And so reduce headcount, reduce some of the expenses there, redistribute people to work in other areas where we need them more. And then from just the data collection side, you know, when people are doing everything digitally, that's great. You know, the number one place people get information about our games is our website and our emails. Well, now we can grow our email database. We can segment better based on what their preferences are. So we can send people emails that they care about. Don't have to do the blast email processes as much. And so it's really helped us in our business and will continue to help us as we evolve.
You know, I was watching CNBC a little bit earlier, and, you know, they had Chairman Powell from the Fed was talking about inflation. Every question's about inflation, it seems like, when you turn on one of these business shows. And, you know, you think about the innovation you guys put into place that allows you to maybe maintain prices and innovation. And the world that I live in is, you know, a very innovative group of people. And, you know, they never really seem to talk about how much innovation is going to hold down inflation. Yeah. But on the other hand, we see the prices of houses, you know, lumber prices are, you know, up and down and so on, and supply chain issues. But, you know, for something like professional sports, I mean, what are ticket prices doing? Are they flat? Are they up? I can't imagine that the cost of business is going lower. You're bringing up, you know, finding good employees. Yeah. It's weird how we have this economic challenge, and yet a lot of us can't find really good employees. So
yeah.
What do you make of all that?
Ticket prices are ballooning, to answer your question, across the country. I will say, we always want to be the value product here in Sacramento. We're cognizant of that. It's part of our model. Yes, we could push prices higher, but that's not our goal. Our goal is not to compete with the Giants or even the Kings or anybody else on ticket prices. We want to make sure that we're covering our expenses and that we're providing a great value product to people. So, but at the same time, there's with some of the challenges this year and our limited capacity to start, we certainly had to charge a premium on certain games. And so our model, again, is what a lot of teams are doing, what airlines, what our hotels are doing, is more of a dynamic model where if there's a game where, you know, we're looking at being a sold-out game, we're going to increase ticket prices on that game. On a Monday night when we're not going to sell out, great, that's a great value opportunity. Tuesdays with dollar hot dogs, our families love coming out. So we want to make sure we're price-sensitive on the appropriate times. And then we try and recoup some of, or just take advantage of some of the opportunities on other games. And so that's a model that we've been using the last few years and have certainly leaned into a little bit more this season. And then it's when we do look at staffing, it is going to be a challenge. And we're already talking about next year and what will that look like and trying to think ahead. We're exploring some of the new technology, the robots, if you will, that are now flipping burgers at a McDonald's or someplace like that. Can that translate to the River Cats, you know, to sports and what we're doing in our concession stands? And if so, great. What does that look like? Is that a 3-year payback, a 4-year payback? Does that speed things up? How will that be taken by our staff? So while we're having these conversations, we have to balance it with our staff is who we are. Mark, I tell everybody, I lead our training every year. Tonight, I'll some of the new staff we just hired, I'll spend an hour with them and I'll go over, here's who we are. Here's our mission statement. Here's our vision. A welcome fan in every seat, a treasured memory for every fan. What does that look like? How do we put the guests first? And I let them know they're more important than I am. And that's been a paradigm in my mind over the last few years is, I don't need to spend as much time on a suite level with our partners. I need to make sure I'm checking in with our game day employees because they interact with our fans a whole lot more than I do. And we broke it down by the number, 600,000 fans. If there's just 60 front office over 70 games, I have to try and see 146 people every game to welcome them to Sutter Health Park. if we have 600 employees and we're all working together, now it breaks down to 14 people per game, and that's just over a person per inning. That's easy. We can all do that. We can all say, hello, welcome to Sutter Health Park. How's your time tonight? Can I help you find your seats? We can do that when we work together. So The Rivercats experience, it is the people. So while we are certainly exploring technology, we're very well aware that our people are what make the experience so special. So that's a challenge, and I don't have an answer today on how we're going to balance that, but something we're very cognizant of.
I've talked to people that were in and around the NBA, and I won't name any names, but I've heard that those first few rows, like King's Row and things like that, and the suites and lofts are where they get the lion's share of their ticket revenue from. And I'm kind of curious, because when you go to a Rivercats game, I mean, there's not a bad seat in the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter where you sit. You're kind of in a VIP type spot. Do you guys, when you look at that, are there revenue streams that are stronger in terms of location, where we are able to extract a lot more revenue from, certain seats within the ballpark?
Yeah, certainly. And certainly we try and provide those premium options like a King's Row or Dugout Club, 96 seats, the first two rows right behind home plate, dugout to dugout. You're closer to the catcher than the pitcher is. And so that's a unique experience for those folks that come out. And so we certainly have opportunities like that. We try and capitalize on those premium areas as well. And those premium seats, access to our legacy club, primarily a corporate account. And so that gives us opportunity to then offset and keep our costs lower on other areas of the ballpark. And so we look at that and say, hey, where can we increase in one area so that we can keep things affordable for the family and in other areas? Those families, that's the backbone of who we are. And so we want to make sure that there's not a barrier for them to come out to a ball game, especially this year.
Can everybody, so I've been at events in your, I don't know if it's the VIP lounge. I'm not sure what that's called. We've done an event there or two with some organizations I've been involved with. And there's a really cool bar in there, but you kind of have to walk by all the suites to get there. Does everybody have access to that, or is that more of a premium type of product?
Yeah, that's one of our premium spaces. Oh, okay. That's a legacy club. And so about 400 people a night have access there. We cap it at that to make sure it's a great experience for our guests who go up there. All the food's included. They've got that great bar. They've got the great view of downtown and the fireworks. And so and I think one of the best assets, the thing that people love the most, in the fifth inning we put out cookies and coffee. Everybody loves those chocolate chip cookies. There's a line. It's great.
That's awesome. Okay, so the other thing, I may have asked you about this a couple years back, I'm not sure, but I would see your stadium, and well, you've changed the name of it to Sutter Health Park. So I'm kind of curious about that, but is there a consideration, or are you doing concerts there or other types of entertainment in, let's call it, the off season? Because I mean, it'd be a great place to have a big party.
Yeah. No, it's in 2019, we hosted a great Latin music concert. It was 12,000 people. It was fantastic. We had Jake Owen, we had Nelly come through. And so we started bringing the concerts back. And obviously all that stopped in 2020. And we're looking at it again for this year. So we have a couple opportunities we're looking at for this fall. I will say, having the high school and college graduations, we had 19 graduations at the ballpark this year. We were doing some two-a-days, mornings and evenings. That was a great opportunity. And we'd typically done a couple per year. We're certainly going to look at doing more in the years to come, because that worked out really well. All the high schools and colleges loved coming out there, having that outdoor space. And so that's something we're going to put more emphasis behind as we move forward. The concert side, I'll give you a sneak peek here. Tomorrow we will announce that Major League Baseball has added 10 games onto our schedule at the end of the season. I guess by the time this airs, we'll have already announced that. But we haven't been able to lock in any events at the end of September or October yet, because Major League Baseball they told us to hold those dates in anticipation of adding games. They wanted to see how things played out with COVID, making sure we didn't have any massive breakouts. And so now they're going to add those 10 games, so we'll get an additional 5 games. Our season will now go through October 3rd. So now that we've got that finalized, we're going back to a few partners, concert promoters, and saying, okay, we're ready to go. Let's try and get things booked. So hopefully we'll be able to announce a date for our Brewfest coming up, and then a couple concerts as well in the fall.
Yeah, it feels like, to me, this is just maybe a personal thing. There's a little bit of a pent-up demand. We feel like we've kind of been home watching Netflix and Prime or whatever for the last year or two, and hey, I wouldn't mind getting out, and boy, yeah, I haven't been to a concert in a long time, it sounds funny, but I kind of miss it. And we're going to end up going to a couple of concerts and stuff. And I've often thought, I like going to the outdoor ones. Mm-hmm. We have a loft at Golden One, and I like going to the concerts there. It's great. But I like the outdoor feeling personally a bit better if you've got decent weather. Sacramento is a place where you can typically get some good weather, especially as it gets into the evening.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you guys would be perfect for that.
Yeah, we just did a we typically do fourth on the field. We do food trucks and a band. And this year, again, trying to plan it, we weren't sure what was going to happen with the reopening. And so we changed the model a little bit to try and scale back. And we partnered with the Philharmonic and Opera. And so they came out. We had a stage in center field, sold field tickets, sold tickets in the seats so we could spread people out, and then sold some of the suites as well. But Mark, it was fantastic. And we were able to eventually sell more tickets when things started opening up more. In the symphony and orchestra choreographed live to the fireworks. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. To your point, we had so many people coming out just having a great time with their family, emails, texts. Chip, that's the best show I've ever seen. And I don't know, it was a fantastic show. And so maybe Pyro Spectacular and the Philharmonic, they did a great job. I don't want to take anything away from them, but maybe it's some of that pent up demand as well that we need that. We need that time together with our families and those memories. And so people are excited to get out and about, and we want to make sure we provide as many opportunities as possible.
That's great. Okay, let's step back. Let's make sure. I want to make sure we share whatever we need to share regarding the River Cats and what you're doing. Well, actually, yeah, sorry. Why the name change on the stadium?
Yeah, so Sutter Health Park. Sutter's been a longtime partner going back to, I think, 2001 or 2002. And so when our agreement was up with Raley's, we've been in conversations with them about whether to renew or not. And so then we just said, okay, hey, if there are other opportunities, other people who may step in, who are some local, like-minded, community-focused partners that we can go with? And so through that negotiation process, Sutter really emerged as hey, this is a partner. They've been here. We're already doing stuff in the community. We're doing stuff at the hospitals. This could be a great community partnership. And so as things started to evolve, Sutter became the clear choice to continue that partnership with. And Raley's was great and supportive. In fact, when we did the announcement in the fall of 2019, Mike Teal, Keith Knopf, Deirdre, their VP of marketing, they were all out there at the announcement. Mike shared a little bit about the family history and did kind of a ceremonial handing of the bat over to Sutter Health. And so it was a great transition. And we're still close with our friends at Raley's and love some of the things they're doing. They continue to do in the community and try and be supportive of them as well. But it's been great with Sutter. And I think because we're so like-minded, even last year, you know, when we weren't having ball games, we were doing a lot in the community together. And then leading into this year, the vaccine clinics that we've hosted, we continue to do those at ball games. The different opportunities, different events we're doing for the Sutter Health and employees. They have such a big employee base here, and they're so committed to the Sacramento region. It was just a natural partnership, and it's continued to grow and get better.
Both those companies are fantastic for our community and give back so much, and you know their brands are both enormous. It's interesting to think back to Arco Arena, and it became, I don't know the whole transition. I can't remember it as well, but it ended up, I think, being Sleep Train. But people still call it Arco Arena.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm wondering, like, the long-term branding benefit for Raley's. I mean, people are going to be calling it Raley Field for a while. I'm sure they still do at some level.
If they do, I'm going to find them.
Okay, if you are listening, do not call it Raley Field. This is Sutter Health Park.
Yes,
thank you, Sutter.
Exactly. And you know, we looked at that and we looked at, we work with different agencies as we're going through this process because we want to understand that and what it would take to make sure people called it Sutter Health Park, to make sure that was in people's minds. Candidly, I think the whole COVID transition helped with that a little bit. And so it was just talking with Carrie Thomas at Sutter Health. She's been great in this partnership. We were just reflecting on that a little bit ourselves. And so I think it's been a good transition. I think the more that we continue to do out in the community, not just in baseball games and with Sutter Health, is going to continue to cement that. And again, we don't want to take anything away from the partnership with Raley's. They're still right across the street. I'm sure Keith can look out his window and wave at us and see what's going on. And so we love that partnership and so appreciative of how important that was just to get the River Cats up and running. But now we're excited about this opportunity with Sutter Health. Yeah. And want to make sure people really appreciate their commitment to the region.
I love it. Okay, so stepping back, and feel free to interject anything else you want about the River Cats as we go, but I'm thinking back to maybe just a general education for us on, you know, you said that the River Cats are not owned by the Giants, they're private. What part of the business of baseball is part of your business, and what part is the Giants? Where do the lines get drawn? How does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting because there are very clear lines, but they become blurry throughout the course of the season. And so the Giants, all of the players, coaching staff, they're all on the Giants payroll. So myself as a general manager, people often think that like Farhan Zaidi or Scott Harris, the GM of the Giants, they think I'm making roster moves to the Rivercats. I have nothing to do with the team. The only thing the Giants ask me about is where to get a good burger when they're in town. So let me make that clear. I have nothing to do with the player personnel side. So we essentially just run the business operations and run the facility of the ballpark. Now, when our players are here, the Giants understand, our fans view them as Rivercats and part of the community here in Sacramento. And the Giants have been fantastic. They want to know what we're involved with, and they want to encourage their players and coaching staff to get involved in the community while they're here in Sacramento. And so our coaches, Dave Brundage, Damon Miner, these guys, they've been great. And whether it's going to visit patients at the hospitals with Sutter Health, or whether it's doing the Baseball for All down in South Sacramento, whatever it is, however they can give back. Tyler Beattie, he's gone to the Union Gospel Mission and shared with some of those people. I love it because our players are so eager. They understand the role that they have, and a lot of that's from the top down. The Giants are really emphasizing that with these guys. And so we love to see how they're involved in the community. I will say, we make sure, I've got some golf lined up for them. We make sure we take care of their wives and girlfriends when they're here. The more we give to them, the easier it is for them to say yes. And really, we want to treat them like we would treat our own employees, like family. And so it's worked out well that way. And we want to continue to make sure that those guys feel welcome and at home here. And that way, they do want to continue to give back.
So you got players and coaches and roster type stuff, salaries, agents. That's Giants.
Yep.
What about stuff like umpires and, you know, the things that have to do with the game itself?
Yep. Yeah. Umpires are Major League Baseball.
Okay.
They have an umpire development program. And so those guys come through and we try and set up golf for them, make sure they've got a good hotel to stay at, and just to make sure that they're enjoying their time here. But that's all run through Major League Baseball. It is interesting. We share some costs when it comes to baseballs with the Giants, with travel. Our league is the only one outside of Major League Baseball that AAA West, now the former Pacific Coast League, we're the only one that primarily uses commercial air. And so our travel expenses are significantly higher than the California League, where the San Jose Giants and the Stockton Ports are part of that. So they typically bus everywhere where we will fly. So we'll have higher expenses there. And so we'll work with the Giants as part of our relationship. They'll help cover some of those costs as well.
So, and then what about the, I have to imagine a big part of the revenue streams for somebody have to do with all the hats and memorabilia and that sort of bit stuff. Who does that?
Yeah, we that all falls under the Rivercats. Okay. We operate our main revenue streams are, we call it our memberships, our season tickets. That's a big chunk of our revenue stream. Then we have our single game tickets, where you and your family may decide to come out to a game. So you guys come out. That's another big revenue source for us. And then you think the suites, the sponsorships, those are our big revenue streams. Food and beverage, obviously, and then merchandise and parking. So those are the main ones as far as Rivercats go. And then we have the special event side. The concerts that we've talked about, the graduations, if you guys come out and rent the Legacy Club for a meeting space, we do a lot of holiday parties up there in the Legacy Club. So that all falls under our non-baseball, our special events arm of the business. So we continue to try and understand different unique ways that we can grow and expand the business.
Okay, well, so maybe just I'll have a, you know, we're kind of running out of time a little bit, so I want to make sure we give you a chance to cover anything that you want to cover. So maybe, if you don't mind, maybe just give us maybe an overview of where you're at now and where you're going, and then maybe I always like to, you know, you've got this wisdom. Maybe you think about the small businesses out there that might be listening, small business owners or people that want to be business owners. Maybe just words of wisdom for them as we go into the fall and this the second quarter.
The wisdom I'm learning is to try and talk to guys like you and pick up nuances and tricks and more wisdom from guys like you. But I will say, one of the things that COVID allowed me to do was to stop and reflect a little bit. I came to the Rivercats in the fall of 2012, and at that time, we went through a lot of changes. I was able to bring my team on, develop leadership, that in turn developed the culture. Culture manages more than people do. That's not new, but people create the culture. And as leaders, we think we impact culture, but what's the true impact? And so I during COVID, when we took a step back, when we unfortunately had to lay people off, it allowed me to get to know a lot of our younger staff that were still on board. And when we talked about, we were shoulder to shoulder working together. Titles didn't matter when we're out working at the food banks and when we're giving food to our folks, the family four packs, the drive-through food pickups. It didn't matter. We were all working together. And so I was able to see the quality and character more of the people we were hiring. And then I heard a podcast from Urban Meyer, and I won't tell the whole story, but he went back to when he was at Utah, and he learned how important identifying criteria for student athletes is. And so at Florida then and at Ohio State, he brought this criteria. We're only hiring this type of person because they will fit our culture and they will bring what we're looking for. And then they will elevate the culture, make everybody around them better. And so we took COVID as an opportunity to get our department heads together and say, okay, as a general manager, I'm going to state that the Rivercats want to hire hardworking, competitive, coachable, and people of integrity that won't put the organization at risk. That last part, that has grown so much over the last several years, just that integrity piece. And so it doesn't matter if it's finance, operation, grounds, or our sales staff. Hardworking, competitive, coachable, and people of integrity are what we're after. Then I had our department head say, okay, for your specific department, you know, what define your culture and what type of person do you want to work in your department that will help fit that culture. And so again, when you think about marketing, fun and creativity, you know, for operations, people that can manage stress and they're not going to get overwhelmed on the operations side. And so then we said, okay, what kind of questions do we need to ask in interviews? And we're doing background checks and we're talking to references. What kind of questions can we ask to try and learn more about these people? And I'll go back to Urban Meyer. They started talking to high school coaches saying, what player do you not want to play against? What player is so frustrating because they grind, they work hard. You always know you're going to be in a dogfight when you play that player. And so that got us thinking about, okay, what type of reference checks are we doing? And so, Mark, as we fast forward, as we're now ramping back up and hiring folks, we're being very deliberate in that process. It's frustrating. I hate it. I want staff now. But we're already seeing the fruit and the dividends coming from the staff that we're hiring that fits this criteria. We've walked away from people that have good resumes because we're like, no, they don't quite fit the criteria that we're after for this specific position. Our HR manager hates me right now, but in the end, you know, no, she's on board and we helped. She helped come up with some of these questions that we asked to try and define, you know, these characteristics. For example, I was asked coming out of college, I was looking at a commercial real estate opportunity, at what age did I start working? And this could have been a paper route or something like that. And I thought back and I was like, well, I was probably 8 years old. My brothers and I, the apartment we were living in, the guy that owned them hired us in the summer to like spread rocks and pull weeds. And then it was a paper route at 12 and then mowing lawns at 15. And then my buddy's dad owned a pizza parlor. So washing dishes at 16, Finish Line, selling shoes at the mall, you know, at 17 and 18. And the guy's like, great, you know how to work.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me. As a small business, I can't afford to teach someone how to work. So I'm looking for a kid coming out of college that maybe they worked in high school, worked through college, and preferably to check that competitive box, did they play a sport and did they work during college? If they did both of those, great. Candidly, the kid is like, no, I want to focus on my grades. Hey man, did you just want to party? Like level with us. You know, I want people that have already learned how to work. So when they come to the Rivercats, that box already checked, they can hit the ground running. They can become a part of our culture. We can do the onboarding. They're doing their job more efficiently at a quicker pace. And so I think that's one thing I'll challenge all your listeners with is, have they taken the time to identify what criteria, what type of person are they looking for, or do they need to work alongside them? Because those are the people that are going to drive the culture. That new hire today drives a culture in 6 to 9 months. And so let's make sure we're going out finding the right people that fit the culture that we're after. Yeah.
Well, thank you. And I don't know if you have any other closing thoughts, but I mean, great guest, always very informative. And, you know, for anybody out there listening, I think if you didn't already know this, the Rivercats are a gem for the Sacramento region. And it really is the people. And you bring so much, Chip, and your team to the community that I think we have to say thank you. And I know it sounds like the one client or customer was very appreciative, but I think a lot of us maybe are more silent and don't even know what to say. But when we have a great business in our community, we do need to say thank you. So thank you, Chip. Thank you to the Savage family. Thank you to Greg Coletti and your other teammates. And, you know, we're lucky to have you guys. Thank you.
Hey, Mark, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. We love this community. The community loves us. And you know, we plan to get through this year and continue to find ways to be that best friend of the community that we talked about.
Love it. Thank you. Chip Maxim, Sacramento Rivercats. Thanks for listening, my friends. Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. And today's show, it was a lot about perseverance. We talked about the story from Good to Great, the Admiral James Stockdale, and the Stockdale principle about facing the brutal facts as we know them while never losing faith that in the end, and maintaining that unwavering belief that in the end, everything is going to be okay. So if you are an entrepreneur out there, I know you know what that's like. Being an entrepreneur is probably the one of the most difficult jobs in the world, but can also be so rewarding. So if you are an entrepreneur and you want to talk about how great you're going to be and the struggles that you are in, you know that I want to know you. So I would encourage you to keep fighting the good fight. for entrepreneurship and to all those out there fighting the good fight, to our security and our way of life, and to the 13 stripes and the 50 stars, and to that one American dream and that big fight that we all face, helping America to achieve. Never above you, never below you, always by your side. Experiences and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.